Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th of July, Anno Domini 2009, and you lucky people. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things to choose, a few things to lose. But here's the first thing you need to know about, and it is seriously important for everybody to pay strict attention. It is going to be party time. Yes, indeed, we are having a party. And
woohoo.
That's exactly right. This Labor Day marks Soundbite's 20th year on the air, 20th anniversary. From the day Bob Smith and I opened our mics and hoped someone would call in to today, it's been a long and interesting journey. But here we are, staring 20 years in the face. And our friends here at Jazz 90.1, especially Rob Linton and Laurel Ann Romeo, are throwing a heck of a party. It's going to be on Saturday, the 5th of September, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. In the middle of that, from noon to 2, we'll be broadcasting the show live, so you can come up and ask questions on the air. We'll be at the Radisson Riverside, which used to be the old Clarion, which I think we seem to all think it was the old Holiday Inn.
Yeah, the old Holiday Inn.
We're not sure. We'll figure it out. We have a month and a half. We have almost 2 months to deal with that.
It was the older Holiday Inn. It was the old Clarion.
Right. When I worked there, it was the Holiday Inn. We'll have vendors showing us cool stuff. We'll even have prizes to give away. Here's the catch. You have to have a ticket to get in. And you can only get a ticket through this station. Between now and the 5th of September, Jazz 90.1 will be giving away tickets. All you have to do is listen to the station to get them. So limber up your dialing finger, listen to the station, and not just during this show, by the way,
all the time. All week long.
And we'll see you on the 5th of September for our 20th anniversary show.
And one thing Rob pointed out in the forums, because a couple of folks were saying, well, is it just one ticket?
No, it's, yeah.
No, there's going to be packages of two and four.
Right. So you if you win, you can bring at least one significant other, and if you're lucky, two insignificant others. So, along with your significant other. So that's actually also today's poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. The Soundbites 20th anniversary party, and your choices are already, man, you guys are old. Can't wait. Yeah, that's nice. And sound who now? So far, we have 37 votes, and already, man, you guys are old, seems to be winning, and you know what you can all do with that. When you're done with that, of course, I know that you'll want to say more about us.
They're referring to you two, not me.
Yeah, clearly us. I know that they'll want to, you'll want to say more about that. So if you look underneath the poll, you'll see a yellow box. If you click on the Give Us Your Opinion link, it will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Very good. I didn't think you were going to make it.
I'm getting this thing down.
You really are. So that's where you can leave your opinion and check out all the stuff I do. I send out a newsletter, and you can search the old ones and all that other hoo-ha. I think it's worth the $15 a year, but then the $15 a year comes to me. So that's how that works. All right.
But you're doing a lot of work behind the scenes that a lot of folks don't see.
That is true. All right. Our first caller of the day is Walter. Walter, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Greece.
Ah, Greece, New York.
Yeah, close to Charlotte.
Just a skip, a hop, a jump, a spit, a whatever those things are away from us.
You got it.
What can we do to make you a happier man, Walter?
Well, I hope this isn't going to be too techie a question for your listeners, but I have a modem problem with Linux on an old laptop. In fact, I called you guys maybe about 2 months ago regarding Puppy Linux, and I was suggested go over to PC Linux OS or so.
Yep.
Okay. Problem is that this is an older laptop, PC Linux OS runs fine on the desktop, but with the laptop, it's too new a kernel, so the Win modem that's in the laptop doesn't work anymore. I have also the super user book for, you know, how to use Linux, trying to get some ideas. I also have an external serial port modem. I hook that up. It doesn't recognize it. So I'm stuck. I can't get either the external, which should run on Linux, but it doesn't. It appears that there's a conflict. It doesn't recognize it and keeps going back and recognizes the Win modem that's in the laptop. And I need a modem when I visit my parents because that's the only way I can get onto the Internet to go and take a look at some of their medical stuff, etc.
Yeah, it's probably confused by seeing two modems.
Yeah, that's what it seems to be.
You may have to go into BIOS of the computer and disable that internal modem.
Oh, okay. I didn't think of going there.
Or you said this is a laptop?
Yes, it is.
Sometimes you can go on the underside of it, open the trap door.
and physically remove it.
And physically remove it. Yeah, there's literally, most of them have just two little leads, and you got to be careful when you pull them off, but you can pull the modem off. That's a separate device that's installed, and you can take it out.
Oh, okay, because I have the manual for this IBM laptop, and it didn't show me, you know, the wiring, et cetera, that there's a modem.
Before you do that,
yes,
you might want to try a couple of programs that will turn your Win modem into a Lin modem.
Okay.
We have a place that you'll be able to go. Steve's going to put it up in the forums.
Okay.
There's a big URL.
Yes, it is. Steve's going to put that URL up into the forum, and that talks about a couple of files you need to download and install. You'll want to follow those instructions pretty carefully.
Uh-huh.
But when you're done, you should be able to run the Win. The real problem with Win modems is they're not real modems.
Right.
They stink. They're software modems.
Right. They're software modems. They're not hardware modems. Most of the software resides in the driver under Windows. And that's why it's a Win modem. They're extra cheap.
It's a lose modem.
Yeah. It's a lose modem. And so what a couple of people have done, have created, and this seems to specifically be for PC Linux OS, although I doubt that's true. I suspect it would work under any Windows operating system. But basically what the deal here is that you install this new driver, one program called Scan Modem and another driver, and it should then make the Win modem into a Lin modem, and it'll work.
Great, because I have been reading everything that talks about, well, I'd have to go into the new kernel and then throw in, reconfigure that, and then try to get the driver and make it work with that, and it just sounded like a lot of hassle.
No, it's not. There's nothing you have to change in the kernel.
Okay.
Nothing at all. All you do are add these two files and set them up, run this little setup program.
Beautiful.
And you should be okay.
Okay.
Read the instructions first, just to make sure. Don't do anything until you've read. In fact, if I were you, I'd print out the instructions.
Yes.
Read them over several times until I know them clearly and carefully, and see what you think.
Okay. And if I have trouble with that, then should I step back to opening up the bottom and pulling out those little wires for the modem?
First, check in the BIOS. That's probably easier.
The BIOS first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right,
yeah.
And see if you can just simply turn the modem off.
Yep.
Okay, marvelous. Okay. Great. Thank you so very, very much.
Good luck. Let us know what happens. All right. That's one of the things. It's less and less likely these days that people have, modems anymore.
Very rare.
Very rare.
I mean, matter of fact, I had one client, machine was in, and I, reinstalled the software, got it all up and running and that, and did the internet and that. And he brings it back and says, you didn't test out the modem. I go, you didn't give me the software for it.
Yeah, right.
Because it had its own separate modem. Oh, yes, I do dial-up. Well, if you told me, and he's all huffy, and it's like, well, if you told me up front, don't you test everything? I go, do you know how long it would take?
Do you really want to pay for Dave to test everything?
I mean, the folks sit there and say, well, didn't you test this program out? Why would I?
That's right.
You didn't tell me. And then if you do test it and they didn't tell you to, they're mad. Well, I didn't tell you to test that.
If it's on the sheet, we go by what the sheet. And
here's what the sheet says. You want it done. That's what we did.
Oh, Sam had another one this week. Yep. They were arguing back and forth. You know, the guy, oh, is that? Sam finally pulled out the sheet and said, here you go. And he goes, oh, I must have forgotten. But meanwhile, you know, it's like one of these cases. She was guilty before proven innocent. And jumping all over her. Yep. And it's like,
I had a customer last week calling, complaining that she couldn't get on the internet with her Wi-Fi. And so we're checking all the usual things. Are you connected to your Wi-Fi, you know, access point? Oh, I don't have one. Well, you kind of have to subscribe to an internet service to get Wi-Fi in your house. Oh, I'm going to use my landlord's.
Does your landlord know?
Does your landlord know? Are you close enough to his apartment to be able to get the signal? And
right.
Oh, I don't want to subscribe to an internet service. In fact, we had one similar to that where a guy bought a Wi-Fi card for his computer and then came back a couple hours later to return it because there was no one in his apartment building he could leech off of.
Yeah.
That's not in our return policy.
Yeah, right. No.
Right. I've had people say, you know, people say, how do I get my email? So, well, your internet service provider usually has, you know, you have an email address there. What is it? Oh, I don't have an internet service provider. Then you're not on the internet, so why do you need email? Oh, I am on email. My neighbor has wireless, and I'm using it. Okay. First, do they know that?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, if you don't have an internet service provider and you don't have your own domain name, you're not going to have an email address.
Exactly.
You can go to Yahoo or Hotmail.
Yeah, you can go to an email service provider, which independent from an internet service provider.
Right.
Yeah, but you need an internet service somewhere to get some sort of email you sign up for.
And it is, in general, and I know people hate to hear this, but it is, in general, frowned upon, and in fact, one might call it, well, let's use the word illegal, to steal internet service from somebody else.
It is illegal to use someone's network without their permission.
Yeah.
That's. I'm sorry that we have to be
and
the ones to tell
And them
you
not
that.
Putting a password on their network does not give you implicit permission.
That's you know right. what? Then
See, if I happen to leave my front door unlocked and you walk in and I shoot you, do you feel like I've used you ill? Is that
probably
I
mean, you'd probably get sued? Yeah,
exactly
but yeah,
right.
Just because I don't lock
well,
my
door
doesn't give
unlocked,
you an invitation.
So I just walked in. Yeah, okay.
Now the other question begs to be answered is: all right, if say, can the landlord get in trouble though?
Right now, most
for providing it.
Yeah, most of the internet
just to him, and then all of a sudden he starts.
Yeah, the internet service providers in your terms of use contract or terms of service contract, they generally say you can't resell your internet service. But I don't know if they specifically, I haven't looked lately, if they specifically say you can't share your internet service because I can imagine they don't want you to because they want the other person to buy their own service.
Right.
Let's go find the terms of service and see.
Yeah, because you know, right. you think
I'm
it,
very sure it says you can't
I'm
resell
you know,
it.
There's somebody out there that says, oh, free internet service, you know, in the apartment, say in the apartment. And then
well, that's
charging.
Different. Yeah. That's different.
Well, that's what I mean.
Right. Now, the other thing, of course, is when the caps get into place, if I'm leeching off your internet service, I don't care what your cap is.
But you as the payer.
Right. If I'm the guy paying, then I'm going to be very, very, very upset. Oh, back up. I want to see how many people are on the stream.
52.
Nice. So, yeah, that's there. I mean, particularly when somebody's got a $300 a month internet service bill. Well, first, if you've got a wireless card, a wireless router, an AP and access point in your home, password protected for Pete's sake.
Yeah. Well, you were just saying last night when we were in Second Life about the cap again. Because I only caught part of it because I was dealing with a few folks.
Yeah, it's in the terms of service again that if they think you're abusing the network, they can cut off your access.
What's their
guidelines for
abuse?
They don't define abuse. That could be meaning you use more than 5 gigs a month, which is what Time Warner wanted to cap us at.
Right.
Talk about an open-ended.
Right. Well, you know, the deal is when you sign up, you say to them, I agree to whatever your terms of service are, and I agree that you can change them without notice. You know, they have that right, and you agreed to that. You signed that commitment. So that's you know, what are you going to do? That's the way that works. All right, before we go on, let's do another thing. I forgot to put this in the actual news thing I sent you guys, but
here we go. Found it.
Okay.
Time Warner Cable Terms of Service, Section 4, Part B. I will not resell or redistribute, thank you, whether for a fee or otherwise, the service or any portion thereof, or charge any others for the service. So you cannot resell it, you cannot share it.
All righty then. Well, I suspect they mean you can, I suspect that within your family that's allowed. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to sue you for
I'm looking for the sub-clauses. Residential service for reasonable, personal, non-commercial use only.
There you go. So it's reasonable and personal if I let my family use that connection.
Right, but not my neighbor.
Right. All right. Computer Associates found itself with some unhappy customers on Thursday after a glitch in their virus definitions blacklisted a series of Windows XP system files. How cool is that?
Oops.
Computer Associates thought XP was a virus. Had it been ME,
they may be
or
right.
Even Vista, they could be right.
If it was Vista, I'd agree with them.
Right. It doesn't self-replicate, so it can't be a virus.
Yeah. So, yeah, if mostly the files were mostly related to Windows XP Service Pack 3. They were automatically quarantined after being mistakenly diagnosed with the Win32A-Malum.ZZQIA virus. I hate the names they give the viruses. Holy mother of pearl. It's absolutely biblical out there. The rain and the thunder and the everything else. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. You should be calling in. I don't know why not. Our numbers, if you're in the 585 area code, it's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 1-800-790-0415. And we are member-supported, Jazz 90.1. You're listening to Soundbites.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Havana Mo's, located at 125 East Avenue in the East End. One of the only legal smoking bars in the city, Havana Mo's features the East End Jazz Boys live every Saturday night from 9:30 to 2 a.m. For more information, you can call 325-1030.
When you become a member or renew your membership to Jazz 90.1, you receive your Jazz 90.1 member card, our thanks, and more. Because with your Jazz 90.1 member card, you qualify for discounts at many fine member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Arondequoit and Gase locations, and Small World Bakery. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299 and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. I'm sure most of you have heard this already, but Google on Wednesday announced that they are producing their own operating system, Google Chrome OS, which will run on both x86 and ARM systems. Now, look, Microsoft came out with a search engine called Bing. Shouldn't Google call their operating system Bada?
Or Bong.
Bada bing, bing, bong. There you go.
Oh, that'd be good.
It's my wife's joke. The Bada joke was
very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say that, or she'll come home. You didn't mention me. It's my joke. Okay, got it.
Well, we just played Come On, Eileen.
Except she's Elaine.
Right, so if you pronounce it wrong, it's okay. Yeah.
The emphasis on this OS is the same as what netbooks originally designed for, light web-based computing. Obviously, Windows XP wasn't designed for such a scenario, but its relative lightweight, low cost, and familiarity have made it a big hit with netbook buyers. Google's new open source OS will almost certainly beat XP and Windows 7 on cost and will be lighter weight, but there's no telling yet just how much it will actually be used. Or how, you know, how the use, how using it, the experience of using it will be. The relative dearth of Linux on netbooks also shows that people tend to prefer a more Windows-like environment. Here's the interesting thing. I have a netbook and I immediately put Linux on it and I couldn't possibly be any happier. In fact, I'm using that netbook right now. It's fast, it's lightweight, it's easy to use. And then there are people I see who bought a netbook and said, how can you be happy with your netbook? It's slow and I can't do everything on it. Well, you're using Windows. That's a large part of it.
Mm-hmm. And it isn't designed to do everything.
And it's not designed to do everything. You know, I use it what it's designed for. I take notes. You know?
If you want a gaming machine, it's the wrong
Well, we're design. Almost back to the what the original laptops were. You had a big, powerful desktop, and then you got a little laptop that could do just a little bit of things to carry with you.
No, remember the early days, the compact suitcase?
Yeah.
That was
the
Osborne
One.
Osborne,
yep. The Osborne One,
well, at the time, that was,
and a half pounds, I think it was.
It was smaller than a desktop.
It was a portable computer.
It had a handle.
It was a luggable computer, is what we used to call it.
With that 5-inch screen?
It was a great screen, 40 characters. Yeah. Yeah, it was a great screen, but...
lowercase was an option?
No. It was a CPM machine, so lowercase was essential, because all the commands were
commands
in lowercase.
Are lowercase, right.
So, yeah, it was. It did have lowercase. But, yeah, and that's the thing about netbooks. They're not designed to be as fast or as powerful. And what I use mine for is a little light web surfing. Although, I do Flash and everything else, so I can go to YouTube and I can do all of that stuff. That's easy enough to do. But also there's some... word processing and, you know, spreadsheets and things like that. But it's not a high-end, high-powered machine. It's just not.
It wasn't meant to be.
Right, exactly. Now, because I'm running Linux, I don't really have a problem running multiple things simultaneously. Like, for example, I'm just finally signing into the IRC chat that we run.
One of the things I've read recently is that the netbooks have matured in the last year. So that the original netbooks for $200-$300 were really crappy.
Yeah, they
and
were.
Now we're seeing some decent netbooks for $400 or $500.
Yep.
And it's sort of fitting in that niche between, you know, the really crappy ones and a full laptop. So they're getting to be, especially the dual core Atom processors, and they're putting enough memory in them, enough connectivity that, you know, just like anything in any industry, you know, next year's model is going to be better.
Ooh, wow, we're updated to 2.4. Excellent.
Updating live on the air.
Excellent. But yeah, that's the thing. I've got, you know, this is a 4-hour battery, 4.5-hour battery. And if I'm running all that stuff at once, I'm a little down on that. My processors run a little higher, but most of the time they only run it. It's a dual processor machine.
But
I'm not doing that much.
For a business person who wants something very lightweight that travels a lot, you know, and is worried about that. I mean, it's still a perfect good machine for, like you say, doing up your notes and everything else and checking your email and doing some light surfing.
Right.
You've got yourself what
you need.
It's
perfect, but when you're trying to run it as your only machine, you know, unless those are the only things you do, I love the people who say, well, all I really want to do is a little, I want to do my email, maybe some surfing, and, edit all my video. No. No, see, now you've kind of gone off the rails a little bit.
Although, annoyingly, in some respects, one of the new features of the iPhone 3GS is it can edit the video that you shoot with it now.
Yes, it can.
You can trim. That's how they define
editing. Well, that's not
editing. Yeah. How many days does it take to do it,
right,
though?
Yeah. Well, trimming is pretty easy.
Trimming is fast.
You trim the beginning, trim the end. You
know, right, that's just a pointer. Bing, bing, you're done. Yeah, so that's easy enough. But
because we were talking before, what about, what was it, the band that recorded and you said was using the mixer?
A band, yeah, there's a 4-track mixer available for the iPhone, and a band recorded and released a song they recorded directly on the iPhone.
Yeah, but if what you're looking for is that second machine that does only the lightweight stuff, then it's fine for that, and even Windows will handle that. But now you can't do that on a half a meg machine, right? That's just not going to happen. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says. Mm-hmm. So That's kind of the thing you have to deal with.
I was listening to a podcast where they took what's the commercial replacement for the Dell Mini 9.
The Mini 12, I think.
Yeah,
it
whatever
is.
They changed the names and we all. I turned it into what's become called a Hackintosh by putting the Mac OS on it. And he said the stock machine was like $400, but that was only half a gig of RAM and no hard drive. Or like a 1 gig, you know, SD card
or
something.
2 or 4 gig, or that was it. Yeah.
So we put 2 gigs of RAM in it and a 64 gig SSD.
Right.
For $800.
Right.
And then
and
it ran pretty good.
Right. This has a gig and a half of RAM, which is actually way more than I need for Linux. I don't ever use half the memory in this thing.
You say that right now, but who knows? You know, coming down the road, like anything else, you know, folks. Well, we've always heard that on like storage. Oh, I've got so much space. I'll never use all that.
Right.
And then a year later, could you add another hard drive?
Right.
Kind of.
Well, that's
space.
The thing. This does have, and the reason I only get 4.5 hours on my battery is because I've got a 160 gig hard drive. It's a real hard drive. So if for example, I took this on the road with me and I took a whole bunch of pictures, I could dump them to that, take a whole bunch more, whatever that's all about. And you know, I'm not going to do a lot of editing of them, but I can certainly look at them if I don't mind scrolling up and down, and I can certainly store them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That's what it's for. But I'm not going to do a bunch of editing or any of that other nonsense on it. But as you know, as a netbook, as what it is, it's a pretty good thing.
Yep.
And I'm actually very pleased with it. So that's pretty neat. All right, let's go.
Well, I like one of the commercials for somebody's netbook where there's a guy sitting and pulls out his netbook and the cute girl next to him on the bench. Ooh, isn't that so cute?
Yeah. And the guy answers all the questions. I'd have slapped him by the third question.
Yeah.
Maybe by the second question. No, thank you. I'll speak for myself, John Alden. All right, here's the deal. This is Stacy from Rochester. Seems to have two separate questions here. I'm a little confused, but we'll try to answer both of them. I wanted to know, what happened to Adaware and SpyBot? I guess these new ones are better and I should not use those anymore. Our assumption here, Stacy, is that you're talking about the Security Tango. For those of you who are fairly new to this, there can't be that many of you, we have a site on the net called thesecuritytango.com, securitytango.com, where years ago I started this because we got really tired of every week telling people step after step after step, right?
Repeating ourselves.
Right. And I called it the Security Tango because it's like any other dance. If you skip a step, you're not dancing anymore. You're just stumbling around. So you have to follow the steps step by step. I recently split that into three separate sections because it was only for Windows. But nowadays, Mac and the Linux also have their own viruses. So really, the Security Tango is now three separate dances. There's the Window Waltz, the Linux Lambada, and the Macarena. I'm so sorry.
I like that.
Thank you. And under the Windows Waltz, we have removed Adaware and SpyBot on Dave's suggestion. The new Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware pretty much do the same thing Adaware and SpyBot do, only better. So there's no point in running those other two programs as well anymore, and it saves you some time. So really, if you dance the Windows Waltz now, you don't need the Adaware and SpyBot anymore.
There's nothing particularly wrong with them. It's just we found something that's a little better.
Yeah. Right. They're both still good programs.
Yes. And it's,
and we may switch back to them in their next versions.
Right. It's a leapfrog thing.
Who knows? I mean, from month to month, it constantly changes.
Yep.
I mean, like we've said before. We put up a wall of defense, and we recommend this and this and this, and tell you to do this, this, and this. Well, by next month, it could change. It's not due to something that we're, being paid or told to do or anything else.
Right.
It's just through our research and me, finding better products. I try to recommend them to folks and say, try this out.
And I have to say that's why I suggest people go back regularly to the actual site itself and see what's changed.
Mm-hmm.
Although, let me see if it does it again. What was really annoying is I was looking to download it to work on a machine, and when I went to, I forget which one it was, they sent me to download.com to actually download the file, and when I search for Super Anti-Spyware, the top two hits on the sponsored ads, one of them is the real Super Anti-Spyware program, and one of them is the fake Windows Anti-Spyware 2009 program.
Really?
Buying an ad at download.com. Let me see if it still does it today.
Ooh. See, now that's something we have no control over. Yeah. I'm sending you to the real site where they send you is their business, and I don't know what to do about that. But anyway, Stacy has a second question, which is, the only problem I noticed is sometimes it takes a little longer for Mozilla to open up. Sometimes it says it's already running when I try to open it after closing out of something. Okay, there's a couple of things there. Mozilla has to load, and that sometimes takes a little longer. But it's very possible that what's happening is that it's crashing somewhere. Well, here's the thing. When you close it out, lots of people have put – there's two things that could be going on here. One is that lots of people have put add-ons into the software, and they don't always behave well. That's not Firefox's fault. That's the fault of the people who wrote the add-ons. But people load up the add-ons. When you load up the add-ons, of course, it then takes longer for the system to open up because it's loading all those add-ons. I've gotten rid of most of the add-ons because many of them actually slow down your surfing, and I just can't take
Yahoo.
That anymore. Never load anything from Yahoo. I'm sorry, just don't. And then the other thing is that if you've had any one of those add-ons, they often don't close correctly, or they take longer to close because they're making some sort of connection over the internet, and they wait for that connection to close before they shut down. So if you run Firefox and then you shut it down, and then you reopen it, it may well be that it hasn't fully shut down because it's still waiting for all those add-ons to close out.
And that's one of the things the new Firefox 3.5 is supposed to address, is those add-ons are sort of in their own protected memory space, and they can crash and they can do whatever they want without affecting the rest of Firefox.
Right, right. But still, it does have that question of, has it shut down yet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the solution is don't shut it down.
Right, which I never do.
Wait until it crashes, and then you can restart it again.
Shut it down once a week for memory leaks, particularly. And that's the other problem. Mozilla by itself runs really, really well, but there are a whole lot of other add-ons that simply don't. Yep. They're not well-programmed. You know, I'm sorry, but they're not.
And they can conflict with other add-ons you have installed.
Exactly. So the fewer of those things, you know, it comes right back down to the thing we were talking about with the netbook. You run lean. You know, often when I am running the netbook, I don't even run OpenOffice. I run AbbeyWord, which is available for Windows and I think for the Mac.
I think so.
And it's a smaller word processing program. Does everything you want a word processor to do, 90%, you know, 90% of everything you want a word processor to do. And it's small and lightweight and free. And it loads awfully fast and runs awfully well. So that's the kind of thing that you might want to know about. And Steve's going to put a link up.
It's a different programming group that's doing the Mac version than the Windows and Linux version. But it's the same AbbeyWord because it's an open source program.
Right, right, right. And that's the nice thing about open source programs. Anybody can port them to another operating system, and anybody can run them. You do whatever you want with them. You can download them. They're free. Updates are free. And AbbeyWord is a pretty hot little program, actually. So pretty neat little thing.
And we talked about it October 15th, 2006. And it's on our link list.
So if you search our link list for AbbeyWord, you'll find that. Sorry, I was just putting that in our caller list.
And I did check download.com is still, when I searched for malware bytes, the second sponsored hit is a fake anti-malware program.
Yeah, so
it's the fake one masquerading to be malware bytes.
Right. All right, our next caller is Dan. Dan, where are you calling from?
The city of Rochester, New York.
Ah, the hub of civilization in the Western world.
Trying to stay dry.
Yeah, good luck.
Anyway, I did talk to you gentlemen a few weeks ago, and I told you, and you were quite happy when I told you this, that I uninstalled and removed the McAfee security suite that I had originally on my Dell computer. And I downloaded from Time Warner Roadrunner the CA security suite.
Yeah.
Since then, I've had one issue that I cannot figure out what's going on. And that is, when I start up my computer, the Microsoft Windows jingle, the start Windows jingle, is broken. That audio is broken. broken. I actually went and currently have open under my control panel the sounds and audio devices, and I can play the startup jingle perfectly. Mm-hmm. So I know that it's there not it a corrupt yeah. audio file or something corrupt in that. I'm thinking that this security suite that I downloaded is got to be very heavy or anchoring something that my computer lost some of its snap, crackle, and pop.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, and I'm looking currently. Also, I have my MS config open to start up. I've got about 15 things starting, and I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, looks like about 5 things associated with the CA security
yeah,
suite.
Yeah, that's the reason. How much memory do you have in your computer?
One of the things that you gentlemen suggested, which I did, is more than double my memory. I had originally a half a gig of RAM, and I purchased another gig card, so I currently have 1.25 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah. So that's just trying to do too many things at startup.
Yeah. You got to trim some of that stuff out. If you've got, like, the iTunes loading up in startup. Or
no, I don't.
Audio
well, still,
software.
You do have a yeah. bunch of stuff starting up.
Oh, sure. I got 15 things, 4 of which are associated to CA Security Suite. So the other 11 issues, the other 11 things which look like they are part of the Microfile. Now, there's a couple of things like Install Shield Update, Common Files Install Shield. That's starting up. Do I really need that starting up?
Yeah, it's all stuff.
Okay.
That's all the bloatware with CA.
Is Install Shield? Well, Install Shield is a pretty generic installer program.
But
so
I think
whenever,
that's part of the CA.
Because Microsoft has their own MSI installer, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff here. For example, System 32, and there's something called the Digital Line Detect. I have no idea what that is, but that is also starting up.
That's probably part of your modem, and if you plug an analog modem into a digital phone line, it will blow up.
Okay.
Electronically. So the Digital Line Detect tries to prevent that from happening.
All right, so that's good.
If you're using an analog modem, yeah. If you're not, you can turn that off. So, yeah, try turning those off 1 or 2 at a time and see what happens. The basic problem is too many things are loading at startup, and that's why the sound is breaking up.
All right, we have to take a break. I'm sorry, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You are listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1. We are Soundbites, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 apparel is available online. Whether it's a long or short sleeve t-shirt, half-zip fleece, hooded sweatshirt, or baseball cap that you're looking for, you'll find it at the Jazz 90.1 online store at jazz901.org.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Smith, and I'd like to talk to you about a screening. No, not a movie screening, but a screening test for colorectal cancer. It could save your life. Colorectal cancer is highly preventable, yet it is the second leading cancer killer of men and women in the U.S. But it doesn't have to be. Screening finds precancerous polyps so that they can be removed before they turn into cancer. So please get screened for colorectal cancer. I did.
If you're 50 or older, get screened. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Soundbites at 41 minutes after the hour. Give us a call. Our numbers are 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 if you're in the 585 area code. If you're outside that area code, it's 1-800-790-0415, toll free. Of course, you can always send us an email. We won't get to it on the show, but you can get us also through our IRC chat, although I don't always have enough time to check that while we're going. Or you can send me a tweet at sound_bites on Twitter. So we're here just having fun. That's all that counts for us. Another news story. Numerous U.S. government and other high-profile sites were the victims Tuesday of a massive distributed denial-of-service attack. Brian Krebs in the Washington Post noted that their site was one of those affected, but the main ones were U.S. government sites, the White House, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, the FTC, the FAA, the Treasury, the State Department are listed. NASDAQ, the New York Stock Exchange were also hit. An AP story from Wednesday claimed that the attacks began on the 4th of July and that they have also targeted South Korean sites. It quoted South Korea's National Intelligence Service as claiming that North Korea or North Korean sympathizers in the South are behind them. The cyber attacks have apparently ended, but the search for those responsible is only just beginning. North Korea remains a likely culprit, especially among politicians, but was it really behind the attacks? North Korea's name first came up earlier this week when government officials in the U.S. and South Korea started pointing fingers, but no one was willing to go on record. Security researchers aren't so sure. Some people don't even believe North Korea could launch such an attack, although others who've seen North Korea's IT expertise have generally been impressed with its level of sophistication. In a report in 2004, South Korea's defense ministry warned that North Korea was training as many as 600 attackers, and its level of competence had already reached that of advanced countries. So we're not quite sure where they came from yet, but they are in the process of tracking them down. The question is, if it does turn out to be North Korea, what can we do about it other than protect ourselves from them, I guess?
Nothing.
Well, right. But that's an interesting little problem. Denial of service attack. There's some things you can do on your site to deal with it, but it's better to deal with it farther up the line if you can manage it. So there's things that can be done, but it takes a coordination among multiple groups of programmers. All right, kiddies. It's that time once again. Sprung it on you, didn't we? Here we go. Grab your footy jammies, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style, in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, God help us all, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's time for Story Hour, Uncle Dave.
Again?
I'm sorry. You have to do it.
Oh, jeez Louise.
It's a moral imperative.
Yeah, okay. All right, what's one thing that we tell folks not only to do once, but twice?
Brush. Floss.
No.
Oh, I forget. Back up.
Rinse and then repeat.
Rinse.
Thank
lather,
you.
Lather, rinse, and repeat. That's it. That's three things, I guess.
But when you got a mental midget,
yeah,
that backs up, oh, he created a partition on his C drive with partition magic and was doing the backups to there.
Yeah.
And the hard drive crashes. And I'm the because I can't get his data back.
Drive Savers. Here you go.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Give me $5,000. We'll send it to Drive Savers.
I mean, you know, you tell folks to back up, but not to the same GD drive.
Well,
that will
cover you if you delete a file. It will not cover you if the hard drive fails.
And he had a CD burner, a DVD burner in it, a brand new DVD burner. Well, that takes too long.
Yep. So get an external hard drive.
Louise,
yeah.
Then get yourself an 8 or 16 gig thumb drive.
How cheap are they nowadays?
Exactly.
We got these really cool new ones from LaCie. They look like a key because they're sometimes called a key drive.
Oh, how cool!
It looks like a key, and you put it on your keychain.
Nice.
So it's always with you, and you don't realize it's not a key when someone tries to steal it.
Kingston just came out with one that takes three different type of memory sticks. I'll bring one in. And it'll take the regular SD, it takes the macro, and as many as you put into it, it sees it.
Nice.
As different drive letters. But, I mean, this mental midget is sitting there griping to me, well, I was doing the backups like you guys said.
Yep.
Yeah, but not to the same stupid hard drive, idiot.
Right.
It's almost as bad as one of our customers thought he was backing up his Quicken, all your financial data. He's been backing up the Quicken application for years. He had a stack of CDs with the Quicken application backed up, not his data file.
Because
it says Quicken on it, so he copied it to the CD.
So back up your data. Isn't there an export and backup thing right in Quicken? Shouldn't he have used that?
It will automatically back itself up to your same hard drive.
Yeah, that's useful.
So you manually back it up to another drive.
But it'll do it to a flash drive, external CD. I mean, it'll
You know, if it's your desktop, plug in an external hard drive.
They're so cheap.
They're so cheap now. Plug it, put it on the network, and everybody can back up to it. Give everybody their own folder. Everybody can back up to it. Get flash drives for everybody. They're pretty cheap. Burn CDs. They're actually more expensive than the flash drives by the time you're done.
Yeah.
But, whatever you do, and the problem with CDs, of course, is that they're more They're more involved, so they're not as convenient. That's the big thing.
Remember, lay them flat, because if you lay them on the side, the data rolls off.
Oh, that's exactly right. Yep.
That's a cool one. It looks like a key, and you stick your SD card into it.
Oh, that is nice. See, we like the SD card ones, the ones you can put an SD card in, because most of them you can't lock anymore. And when we're going to somebody else's computer with our diagnostic tools, we really don't want to get their viruses and
stuff. I had to do that with a customer last week, and so I was real quick to erase my flash drive after I did that. On my Mac, even. So
Right.
Well, this is another story, and we'll talk about this after, about flash drives. I got a horrendous story there to tell you about.
Yeah, so it's, you know, what you're backing up depends on what you're trying to prevent or protect against. If you want to protect against deleting a file, backing up to the same hard drive is okay. Right. But the fact that your hard drive will fail eventually means you should back up to a different drive.
Exactly. All right, kiddies, that's it. We are done with Uncle Dave for another week. Put your empty cocoa mugs in the sink. Get out of your footy jammies, and we're going to give Uncle Dave a shot. Put him back on the shelf for another week, and we'll bring him back next week. But, yeah, that's very true about backing up. Buy yourself actually a couple of – they're so cheap nowadays. Buy yourself – and take a look at how many documents you – you know, if you want to back up your music and all of that stuff, that's separate. We're talking about the documents that you create. Particularly if you run a business, buy yourself an external drive. Throw it on the network.
Well, you can get the Buffalo Drives is one brand, happens to be one brand, that you can put on there as a network drive. But I would recommend, even with that, sitting next to it is you have another USB drive, maybe hooked up from one of the machines that copies all the files from the Buffalo Drive down to this.
And two backups is better than one.
Yeah. But just last week.
And you can set these machines up to back you up automatically.
Every night.
My machine every night backs my documents directory. Mm-hmm. Up to my server, actually, which is off on the internet somewhere, and that gets backed up on tape. So I'm doubly protected.
Yep. Well, we were just reporting last week, there is now a new Trojan out there that it's gotten smart. And I've told folks, you know, for the longest time, to be leery of these flash drives, because now they've got a Trojan out there that will literally search for any flash drives that are hooked up to your machine, because they found out, well, everybody's using these nowadays because you can put so much data on them.
Right.
They're not protected. And if they go from one machine to the other, hey, I've got a free transport.
That's exactly right. You're doing my work for me. Thank you.
Yes. Hello. And you get it on some corporate network?
Yep.
Oh,
and that's the other thing. Make sure you dance the security tango before you back up.
Yeah.
Duh.
Because you're going to back up all those viruses and malware, too.
That's exactly right. All right, let's take another email call. Okay. This past week, I noticed that when... who is this? Peter from Rochester. This past week, I noticed when using my Mozilla Thunderbird to bring up my email, it won't let me open any of the attachments or sub-email addresses within the email. What comes up is a box that says Mozilla Crash Reporter. I send the report just like it tells me to, and nothing happens. Still the same repeats. Have Googled about this crash and a lot of other people experiencing the same. No fix for this. And they also want a $9 fee to start some sort of fix. Please advise what I should do. Thanks in advance, Peter. P.S. I also have Mozilla Firefox for my internet and AVG security. What it sounds like, Peter, is that you've got either a bad or a damaged Mozilla.
Yeah.
A bad Thunderbird. This can happen. It might also well be that the problem is actually with your email itself. You may have a bad email in there.
But either a bad message or a bad header or something like that.
Well, that's where I recommend, again, use that Revo to take any program out. That does the best at removing all the other stuff that Windows does it. Because all Windows does is turn off one bit. And it says, all right, the program's uninstalled.
Right.
For the most part.
A couple of things you can do to test whether it's the program or your profile is to move your profile out of its directory. And then the next time you launch Thunderbird, it will ask to make a new profile. If that works, then you know it's in your profile, and then you got to figure out where, which is trickier. If that still doesn't work, then it's probably Thunderbird itself, and uninstall and reinstall could help that.
Right.
And since you have a backup of your email profile already, you can restore your backup from before the crashing started.
That's exactly right. But there's a bunch of... there are some problems with that, and you're right, a lot of other people are having the same kind of problem. But I think that's the way I would go about solving it. So, yeah, give that a try. It could also be, the problem could easily be one of those stupid add-ons. You know, there are add-ons for Thunderbird, just like there are add-ons for Firefox.
Is there a launch in safe mode like Firefox has? Let me look for that.
Look for that. But I would suggest, disabling all of your add-ons and see if the problem goes away, because it could be one of those is where the problem comes in. Mm-hmm. So there's a million of those, you know, and like we've been saying, a lot of them are good, but a lot of them really kind of aren't. So
Can launch Thunderbird in safe mode, which then won't load any of the extra plugins and loads just the generic stuff, and you can see if that works to get into your email. And then I would suggest backing up your profile immediately, because you probably don't. Even though you should, you probably don't. Yeah. Right. So just in case, do a backup of the email profile right then.
Right. And that was Peter from Rochester.
Yep. Backup, backup, backup. Can't say it enough. And I mean...
And keep multiple backups. Yeah. So like, in this case, who knows when the email corrupted or when Mozilla corrupted.
Yeah, you could be
corrupted.
Backing up and backing up.
Right, so you could be backing up your corrupted data.
Yeah. Right. I mean... You know, folks, they put some of the programs on there, and then they forget to actually run them.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, so then they get all bent out of shape as well. Yeah, I've got this stuff on there. What good does it do it? Well, have you run it? Well, I've been kind of busy.
I didn't know I had to install it. I just downloaded it. I've heard that quite a few times.
Well, and that's the people, you know, that's why we call it the tango. People are always saying to me, well, it didn't work. Well, all right, what did you get after step four? Well, I skipped step four. Well, and that's why it didn't work.
Yeah.
I only put step four in there because it amused me. You don't have to actually run it. I found step four amusing. Skip it.
There is no step six.
Step six, there is no step six.
Step seven.
Yeah, right.
Go back
that would
right
amuse me.
Time.
Then you could skip step six. But that would be kind of good, you know, if Dave's walking away and he's still tethered in.
Yeah, I almost feel like my fat Greek wedding.
You're right.
I did that the first week we were on the board. I go to walk away, and I'm still tethered to here, and I felt my head going back and my ear being ripped off. Luckily, we don't have a camera in here. Everybody would be laying on the floor laughing.
Ain't that the truth? We've talked about it. I've got a camera in my computer, but it would only look at me. It actually would look at the microphone, and I would be behind it.
I'll have to see if I can find that other one.
Yeah, because we had that USB camera at the Wham studio for a while. It's not still there, is it?
No.
That building's empty.
That is under
If it
demo.
Is there, it's there forever now.
No, did you ever turn in your keys?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did. Yes, we absolutely did. But really, if you think about it, and this is where the problem comes in, there's a certain amount of discipline that you have to maintain when you're using a computer. And some of us find that to be second nature, but for a lot of people it's not, and you have to be careful. For example, when it comes to backups, you want to make sure that your backups are going out of your computer to somewhere else. You want to look to see if, in fact, those backups actually happened. That's kind of important. The next big thing that you need to worry about, and I hate to say this, but a lot of people forget it, is that you want to make sure that those are clean backups. So if you're going to dance the security tango, dance it before you do your backup, so that what you back up is clean. And when you do dance the security tango, make sure you include, if you've got an external drive, make sure you include that drive, because many viruses jump computers over the network. So viruses, trojans, whatever, but they jump computers over the network if they're actually viruses. And so you want to be careful that you haven't, or that someone else on your network hasn't affected that external network drive, and then it gets to you. So you want to be pretty careful all the way around to make sure everything gets gets done. And one of the things that you can do with most antivirus programs is when you run them, you can always say, usually either from the command line or from the GUI, you say, you know, check drive N, or whatever your network drive name is, right, and letter is. And so you can make sure that you've got everything covered. That's very important to be aware of, and therefore the order in which you do those things is important. Clean first, backup second, and then backup again to something else third.
Yeah, one of the things we've talked about in the past, there's a web service called Dropbox, and you get 2 gigabytes of storage for free. And the interface is just a folder on your computer. Whatever you drop into that folder gets automatically sent up to the server.
Right.
So you can use it to synchronize between multiple computers, but now it's an off-site backup of your most important files, and you get 2 gigabytes for free, and you can buy more space if you want.
Right, and it's certainly not someplace you're going to put all of your photos or all of your music, but those documents that you write, your spreadsheets and your word processing
documents.
Or for
like a business. Yeah. I mean, like a business. If you're doing QuickBooks or whatever program you're
your
using,
programs, yep.
any financial information that, you know, put it up there.
And it's good to have an off-site backup. If there's a catastrophic problem, your house burns down or a flood or something like that, your computer and your backup drive sitting next to each other don't really help much.
Or they get zapped in a power outage or something else, you know, and you turn it on and all of a sudden it's going...
Right.
See, that's one thing I don't like about the continuous backup programs. Apple's Time Machine does a continuous backup. Every hour it backs up your stuff. Well, that means you have to have the drive on and connected all the time.
Do we have a link up for that? What's that? What was it again?
Which?
For the backup.
Time Machine?
Time Machine. Time Machine. Oh, it's built into Apple's
Apple
software.
No, I'm talking about the outside.
Dropbox, yeah.
Yeah, it's up there.
I'm pretty sure we talked about it a few weeks ago. So your backup drive has to be on and powered and connected in order to do your backup. But then if something happens to the main computer, your backup drive can fail too. So have multiple rotating backups and an off-site backup just in case.
Right. All right. That seems to be it. We're going to take a quick break. That first hour just flew by. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a few minutes. Don't forget to give us a call. It's in the 585 area code. It's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free. It's 1-800-790-0415. And don't forget, we're also... We're getting ready for a party, man. That's gonna be so much fun. September 5th. Stay tuned to this station, Jazz, member supported Jazz 90.1. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You're listening to member supported Jazz 90.1. We are Soundbites.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Composer, arranger, bandleader, John Altman is sitting in.
When I was very small, my first contact with music was through one of my uncles, who led the band at the London Palladium, which was then the apex of variety. Among the people he accompanied were Ellington, Benny Goodman, Sinatra, Judy Garland, Danny Kaye, the Marx Brothers, the Andrews Sisters, Jack Benny, Bob Hope. Need I go on?
Oh,
you know?
My gosh!
And I grew up when I was very young, with them as family friends. And my other uncle had been probably the most famous arranger in Britain in the 30s for the Ambrose Band, which was a top dance band in the UK. And he came to New York at the invitation of Irving Mills in 1937 to lead an all-star big band, and during which time he auditioned and rejected Sinatra for his band.
Oh my, I bet he was
surprised
how that turned out.
And also recommended Buddy Rich to the Artie Shaw band. So he had a big hand in sort of shaping jazz history.
Oh yeah. So when did you start actually playing?
Well, I started playing piano at 7. And started composing at 7.
In what sort of thing were you composing at 7?
Just little pieces, you know, sort of small piano pieces that I could actually play. And bizarrely enough, many years later, I was doing a commercial for a London chain of shops, and they said, what we really would like is something that sounds like it's written by a 7-year-old. And I said, well, I've got you there because here's something I wrote when I was 7 years old, and that became the theme for the commercial, so I actually remembered it.
So you were
never waste anything.
Yeah, that's what this teaches us, yeah.
Absolutely.
John Altman, whose career includes TV and movie soundtracks, Emmy nominations, and one heck of a big band. More to come. I'm Helen Borges.
Hear a full hour of Sitting In with Helen Borges every Friday at noon on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is your Biotech Minute. For centuries, man has used plants as a natural source for the treatment of disease. Now, new advances in biotechnology make it possible to turn plants into factories that produce what are called therapeutic proteins for use in the manufacture of biotech drugs, medicines, and therapies. Although still in the research stage, developing therapeutic proteins in plants can be a safer, more efficient, and a cost-effective method to manufacture plant-made pharmaceuticals to combat life-threatening illness such as heart disease, cancer, HIV, diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, and cystic fibrosis. Biotechnology, cutting-edge science helping to heal, fuel, and feed the world. A public service message from this station and the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
Every morning I open the door. Hello, stock. Hello, store. Building my business, building my dream. I'm glad to have radio on my team. It reaches my customers and new ones too and tells them about what we offer and do. I'm watching my budget. I have to spend smart. For me, radio is a good place to start. Radio works harder. Put it to work for you at RadioHeardHere.com.
Brought to you by this radio station to remind you that radio is heard here. Radio is heard everywhere.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call. Our number's from the 585 area code. It's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. And if you're outside the 585 area code, it's like, say, if you were in, oh, I don't know, Omaha, Nebraska, it would be 1-800-790-0415. Oh, what's this? By sheer coincidence, we have a caller from Omaha, Nebraska.
Ooh,
unbelievable.
Yes, DeHomely,
welcome.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Got a question about IIS server.
Yes.
It seems like
when they went to
version 7, they dropped the front page, extensions.
Yep, they did.
Thank God. Front page made the crappiest code and slowed down servers something terrible.
Well, I agree with that. However, I have a client that's how he lives.
Using the front page extension?
We're trying to figure out how to get around that now.
Go back to the old version of the server.
Yuck. Okay. So there's no workaround on that now, huh?
Not as it stands right now that we're aware of. I mean...
Well, you can do that. You can install it.
Yeah.
Onto the front, onto IIS 7, actually.
Yeah, I just found a link to tell you how to do it.
Yeah. There, you can install it. It isn't built in anymore, but
okay.
you can add it back. And Steve's going to put a link on our website at soundbites.org.
Okay.
And Francis would have me remind you that is bites with a Y.
Okay. Yep. Got it.
And there's a link to how to add those extensions back in. Now you need to remember that will slow the server down.
Okay.
And there's just nothing new about that. Front page was bad code on the server side and bad code on the client side, and that means it's slower.
So you may want to transition them away from front page into something
right.
A little easier.
Right. I'm taking them to WordPress.
Yep.
Oh, much better.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, much better. I just put WordPress on my personal site at nickf.com.
I've heard a lot of cool things about Squarespace being really easy to migrate into and away from.
Yeah, away from is good. Oh, no, it's a nice,
yeah, it's one of the few programs that lets you export your data so you can go to another service when you want to.
Yeah, I've been looking at ELG, ELGG, and thinking of migrating the Soundbite site to that. But at any rate, but that's a lot of work, and I can't yet. But anyway, DeHomely, that's the way that works.
Great. So you should be able to appreciate it, guys.
Absolutely.
Have a good one.
Have
you
fun.
Too, sir.
Okay.
DeHomely is one of our friends from Second Life. We are in Second Life every Friday night.
Yeah, we should explain that to a few folks that are new to us.
That's right. Second Life is a virtual reality thing that you can get into on the computer, a virtual world. And you create an avatar, which is a sort of a character that looks like whatever you want it to look like.
Yeah.
We look like ourselves. they look like not us at all.
Yeah.
Our avatars look like us, and you can wander around, you can build things, you can visit stuff other people have built, and it's essentially a virtual community. It's a social networking site, really. And we are there every Friday night from 9 to 10:30, 11-ish, whatever it takes.
Eastern Standard Time,
which is 6 o'clock Linden time, because they're on the left coast there.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a link from our website at soundbites.org if you've installed the Second Life client, which you can do from secondlife.com. And DeHomely is one of the folks who comes
DeHomely,
just about every
Dory,
week.
Golda, I mean,
they're all from Dreams.
Yeah, we've got folks, Beachy, who's in Florida. I mean, these are folks literally.
We've got people from the other side of the world.
Enchant was there last week. She's from England. I mean, literally, and you're talking to these
people from Australia and everywhere else. It's great. It's great.
Real time.
These are good people.
It blows my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, these are good people. Yeah. So at any rate, that's us in Second Life on Friday nights. Then we're here on Saturdays, and you can catch us in line at the grocery store most every Thursday. And it's just
get ready and listen all week at Jazz.
All the next month and a half.
Yeah, you're going to want to listen in, folks, because we're going to have tickets.
Two months. Over. It's just about 2 months.
Is it?
Sure, it's September 5th, right? And this is July
11th. Yeah, I don't want to hurry the summer. I mean,
we want to take our time.
Yeah,
we want to take our time. But as Dave is alluding to, for those of you who tuned in late, I can't imagine why you did. I'm sorry, I mean, what I mean is, for those of you who tuned in late, we're going to be having a party. We are going to be having a party on September the 5th. It's our 20th anniversary. Man, and I feel every day of it. You should have seen Steve and I. He heard himself moving tree stumps, and of course I have arthritis in every joint in my body, so it was the race of the gimps out to the other room there. this party coming up on September 5th. It will be our 20th anniversary. The great folks here at Jazz 90.1, Rob Linton and Laurel Ann Romeo, have put together a terrific thing at the Rochester Riverside, at the...
Radisson Riverside Rochester Hotel.
That name so darn long.
Right. The Riverside Hotel, which, as near as we can tell, is that old Holiday Inn, the old Clarion.
Across the street from the convention center.
On Main Street. That's as near as we can figure out. That's what the one it is. And that'll be September 5th. The problem is, it's going to be from 11 to 4. We'll be there for the whole time, but we'll be doing the show from 12 to 2, which will be kind of fun. So you'll be able to come up and ask us questions live. We'll put people on the air. We'll chit-chat with them. We'll put them on the spot. When was the last time you backed up? So everybody's going to back up Saturday morning or Friday night. I backed up last night, and they'll get that smug look on their face. Sure, first time in 8 years, but you did it, and that's really what counts. Yeah. And then we'll have prizes, and there'll be vendors there, and it's just going to be a whole thing. There'll be a whole lot more information about it as we get closer.
They've already got the Amerks coming.
They got the Amerks and Frontier.
Frontier
coming. So it's very exciting. We're very thrilled. We're very pleased. God bless all of the vendors. We'll be talking about all of them as we know more. There'll be prizes that we're giving away and all kinds of stuff. But here's the catch. The only way you can get to this thing is with a ticket. And the only way you can get a ticket is we'll be giving them away on the air. And when I say we, I don't mean just this show. I mean Jazz 90.1. So listen all day, listen all night. They'll be giving tickets away left and right for this thing. Up to 150. So we don't know yet when that actually starts, but it will start soon. Tickets will be in groups of two or four.
Yep.
So you'll be able to bring either a significant other or a significant other and two insignificant others. And we'll or let me say, equally, if not less significant others.
That works.
Okay.
I can handle that.
You can handle that. And then we'll all be there having just a great time. There will be snacks. We'll be providing snacks, but there will also be a cash bar and a box lunch you can buy. Don't forget, we're member-supported radio. Nothing is
you know what? I just realized.
Nothing's free. What?
We've been together longer than my first marriage.
And the,
mine too.
Not longer than mine, thank you very much. But and it does, and we're not anywhere close to divorce, although there are days, both of you, I'm telling you right now.
You love
see,
us.
Unlike,
I do.
Unlike a marriage, we only have to see each other once a week.
Perhaps both of your first marriages would have lasted if you'd only seen your respective spouses once a week for a couple hours. Oh, luckily you're divorced already, or it would have been happening later today.
No, God love my wife. No, I mean,
both of you, very lucky men.
Yes.
Second time around. I got lucky the first time around.
Well, this is my first, but not hers.
Well, right.
Up on, matter of fact, this December 28th, it'll be 25 years for me.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm still around.
Nice.
I know it.
Nice. I'm coming up on 20, what year is this? 29.
Yeah, I'm closing in on 15.
Yep. And my wife hasn't wised up yet, so I'm a happy man. That's all there is to that.
20 years here. Man.
Yeah. Your wife's a saint. All right. Microsoft is prepping. Microsoft monthly visitor will be with us this coming Tuesday. They're prepping fixes for vulnerabilities in the Direct Show and Video ActiveX control components. As part of July's Patch Tuesday, the July 14th Patch Tuesday release will consist of 6 security bulletins, 3 of which are rated critical. Microsoft plans to SWAT 2 Windows bugs that have come under attack by hackers. Among the collection of patches are fixes for the DirectX vulnerability that Microsoft first warned users about at the end of May. But also slated to be fixed is a vulnerability in the Video ActiveX control that the company warned about July 6th. All told, there are 6 bulletins scheduled for next week's Patch Tuesday. In addition to the aforementioned bugs, is a 3rd bulletin for Windows that is rated critical. And there are 3 updates that are rated important for ISA, which is the Internet Security and Acceleration Server, Virtual PC, Virtual Server, and Microsoft Office Publisher. Microsoft on Thursday confirmed that it has known about a bug behind widespread Internet Explorer attacks for more than a year, but defended its security process against critics. The 16 to 18 month stretch between early 2008 and now is too long for customers to go without a patch, we all think. It's just not an acceptable time frame. It shouldn't take a year, not for a company the size of Microsoft. Of course, the question then becomes, what took it so long? Well, one of the researchers who reported the vulnerability hinted at the reasons. The nature of this flaw is sort of unique, he said. The mechanics of this are sort of unique as well. It was those unique qualities that required more time than Microsoft would normally need. And as a matter of fact, there isn't a fix yet, as a Microsoft spokes individual acknowledged. We'll release something that will block all known attacks next week, he said, referring to Tuesday, July 14th. When Microsoft rolls out its monthly security updates, but it won't be a full-fledged patch. So they've known about this for a year and a half and still haven't fixed it. A year and a half and still haven't fixed it. All right, whatever.
What? We should be surprised?
Whatever. That's okay with me, I guess. I'm under Linux. I read about I belong to a bunch of the security lists. Right, so if I read about a vulnerability, I start counting. Sometimes it's hours, and sometimes it's as much as a full day, but then it's fixed.
Well, one thing we should...
Yeah, usually the guy that finds the problem fixes it himself, and then posts.
And then reports it, exactly.
Yeah. today, as a matter of fact, I don't know what time today it ends, probably left coast time, but Microsoft, if you go to the Microsoft store.com, you can get the update for Windows 7 right now for half price, because the the pro version, which I just signed up for.
Pricing ends Saturday, July 11th, 11:59 Eastern Daylight Time.
11:59,
which was an hour ago.
At night or
in the morning? Yeah, 11:59 p.m.
It doesn't say a.m. or p.m., so I'm going to assume they're using military time.
No, you're not going to assume that at all.
No.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
But if you can, try to go to the, if it's still up, folks, go there because you can literally save over $100 right now for the upgrade to Windows 7 Pro.
And I can order it, so it's still accessible.
Yeah. And like I say, granted, you're not going to get it to October.
Yeah, you can give your money now and then get the product in 8 months, but have saved money.
I think, you know, I mean, it's $100.
Yep.
$100 is $100 right now, yeah, versus, you know, sitting in my bank account here versus... Yep.
The only, well, see, that's the irony, is they'll put it in their bank account and make interest on it.
But you're also, right now...
Yep. The only upgrades that are on sale are the Windows 7 Home Premium upgrade on sale for $50 and the Windows 7 Professional upgrade on sale for $100. The Windows 7 Ultimate upgrade is not on sale. It's going for $220.
And this is the big thing. People are confused. Windows has so many versions, and the differences among them are so minute that people are very confused as to what they actually need.
Yeah. Because the biggest difference in the Pro
is the bit blocker and the additional languages.
Well, that's an Ultimate. The Pro version, the biggest difference is you can run XP mode. So if you have old software, that will work. And you can join domains on a Microsoft server.
So if you don't need to do either of those, you can stick with Home Premium.
Yep. Right. It doesn't look like they're selling a Home Basic or Starter in the U.S.
Those are over in England, and they're called Windows E, which is the one without Internet Explorer, and Windows E some other letter, and that's the one without Explorer or the Windows Media Player.
Yeah. Now, the full price...
We can't get those here, by the way. You can't get Windows without Internet Explorer and the Windows Media Player. Two of the biggest open holes that malware comes in through.
Yeah, the upgrade prices are based on people upgrading from XP or Vista, and you will need to have a pre-installed version or a CD that you can verify that you own the previous version. The full version, Windows 7 Home Premium Full, will be $200. Windows 7 Professional Full will be $300. And Windows 7 Ultimate will be $320. So I guess for $20 you get BitLocker, or for free you get TrueKit.
Right. All righty, we're going to take another quick break. Don't forget, give us a call. I'll mention those numbers when we get back. But for right now, I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright and Steve Ray. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
When you become a member or renew your membership to Jazz 90.1, you receive your Jazz 90.1 member card, our thanks, and more. Because with your Jazz 90.1 member card, you qualify for discounts at many fine member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Arondequoit and Gates locations, and Small World Bakery. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299 and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates.
Thanks for asking, but I'd rather not send you nude pictures. I'm camera shy. I already said no. Under my clothes, I'm a robot. My webcam is broken. I'm worried they'll get passed around school. I have a rash. I have nudophobia. I have lizard skin. I'm a vampire, so I don't show up in pictures anyways. Your badgering has really killed the mood.
When someone is pressuring you to do something you don't want to, how many ways can you say no before they get the message? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Rip Savage. Join me tonight for Fusion at 10 p.m. right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Really, thank heaven we do not have a camera. Dave is dancing to the music here. Give us a call. If you're in the 585 area code, it's 966-JAZZ, 966-5299. Or if you're outside the 585 area code, it's toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And apparently Dave is still hearing the music in his head because he's still dancing. My daughter does that nowadays. She'll be dancing and singing along, and I'll go, honey, do you know you're not actually wearing your headphones?
But see, I am.
Oh, right, Dad. But I know the music all it's in my head. I said, okay, why did I buy you an iPod then?
And you still
if
only
you got the music in your head, why am I? Why did I buy you an iPod?
And you still only hum every other word.
Yeah. Have you ever met anybody? Yeah, right. Have you ever actually met anybody who sounded good singing along with their iPod? Seriously, today. They generally, people just don't sound good singing along with their iPod.
No, I'll take that back. There is one guy. He's on his bike now, but he goes riding on his bike. But he used to walk. And he comes down my street, and he has one heck of a voice. He's almost like a tenor. And, I mean, you can tell he's got his iPod, you know, and he does have a good voice. Very deep, you know, and singing.
Well, that would probably
along.
Make him a bass rather than a tenor.
Well,
I'm a baritone. My voice isn't that deep.
But he is very good. And Lori, my wife, has mentioned it to him a couple times. He just sort of smiled, and he's sort of shy, and he just keeps riding by now. But
very,
nice. Very good voice.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
All righty. Back to the news. Twitter. We have a Twitter account. Sound underscore bytes at Twitter. Because Sound Bytes was taken up by somebody else, so we're Sound underscore bytes. Twitter is suspending the accounts of some users whose computers have fallen victim to a well-known piece of malicious software that has targeted other sites such as Facebook and MySpace. The malware, called KubeFace, is designed to spread itself by checking to see if the user is logged into a social network. It will then post fraudulent messages on the person's Twitter account, trying to entice friends to click the link, which then leads to a malicious website that tries to infect the PC. The popular microblogging service, they call it a microblogging service, has had a strong impact as a new communications platform, such as providing on-the-ground insight from participants in the recent protests over the presidential election in Iran. But it has also been targeted by fraudsters and hackers who are using it as a way to infect people's PCs with malicious software. Twitter is the latest site to be targeted by a KubeFace variant. Other sites have included Bebo, Hi5, Friendster, and LiveJournal. At least a couple of hundred accounts have been affected by KubeFace's latest efforts. When it made its first appearance a couple of weeks ago on Twitter, KubeFace was just sending out three shortened URLs leading to malware. Kube is sending out more bad links this time around. And, of course, this is the Twitter has been fairly quick at shutting down the accounts of people who are infected and resetting their passwords. But this has been a... this has been an ongoing problem now with Twitter. One of the things that Twitter, for those of you who don't know, is a service where you can type in up to 140 characters and send it out, and it makes it a short thing. It's almost like a text message on your cell phone, but it's on the computer. The problem with that is if you want to include a link, you can't. Most links are very long, and so you can't do that. There are shortening services like tr.im. or is.gd, I think it is, that will shorten that link for you. So you go to their site, and they translate that into the longer link and send it out. The problem with that is now you don't really know where you're going. So the bad guys have started to use the shortening tools to send people to bad places. So it's something that people now have to be very, very careful of. So when you're going to places like that, you need to be careful as well. All right.
And a lot of celebrities are getting caught by those social networking viruses because they aren't often technically sophisticated.
Right, right, right. Or sophisticated sometimes in any sense of the word.
True.
Very true. All right. Our next caller is Chris from Williamson, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm calling with a question in regards to firewalls. Mainly, I have Zone Alarm Pro, or at least I did, on my main computer, and it's not been working for a very long time, and it's expired now, and before I renew it, I wanted to find out, is it worth renewing? And is there anything else besides zone alarm out there that would work better?
Well, let's step back a bit. You said you had zone alarm on your main computer. This leads me to think you have other computers.
Right. Well, on the main computer, I put Zone Alarm Pro.
Right.
That's the paid version.
Yes.
And I had the free versions on a couple other computers, plus some of my friends have it on theirs. And it seems like it's every version is quit. You know, it's supposedly on there, but you can't access it, and it doesn't do anything.
Well, That I've never seen, but let me back up a step. Well, first, let me suggest that each and every one of you dance the security tango.
Mm-hmm.
In your case, the Windows waltz, because I'm thinking that you've got a problem.
Or a lot of stuff running.
Right. There have been issues with Zone Alarm and the Windows updates conflicting, and Zone Alarm preventing Windows from working, and updates preventing Zone Alarm from working.
Right, and that's a possibility. But more importantly, particularly on your machine, is this a desktop or a laptop?
Well, I've got it on a desktop.
All right. And do you have a router?
Yes.
You may find that that router has, most likely, has a firewall in it.
So, now, would that be a mechanical firewall or
software? Firewalls are always software. But they would run in the router itself, right? And so whatever a firewall would normally do, it'll do. Now, the nice thing about Zone Alarm is that it's a two-way firewall.
Mm-hmm.
The firewall in your modem is outward-facing. That is to say, it protects bad stuff from getting in, but if you're already infected, it doesn't prevent bad stuff from getting out, whereas Zone Alarm may well also prevent bad stuff from getting out. But generally speaking, if you've got a firewall in your router, then you don't also need to run a firewall on the machines inside the router, that way saving yourself some compute cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have a laptop, you certainly don't need a firewall when you're inside your network. But if you take it outside your network, you should have your own firewall.
Correct.
So for a desktop, however, you really don't need to be running a firewall on the machine itself. However, still, because all of your machines' ZA stopped working and on your friends' machines, that seems to tell me that there's something not kosher.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest definitely dancing the security tango. Again, in your case, that would be the Windows waltz. And make sure that your machines are clean, and then you can uninstall Zone Alarm. And, you know, since you're behind a firewall, you don't really need it.
Okay.
But now you have to make sure. Now it's time to get out the manual. The manual that came with your router and check to see if, you know, how to make sure your firewall is running.
I know, it's a very old Microsoft router, so it supposedly
router?
I don't think Microsoft ever made routers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of them. It's quite old.
Microsoft never made a router.
Well, it goes between the, you know, where you can hook up more than one computer to it, and because between the modem and, you know, the computers.
Right, yeah, but we don't think Microsoft ever made a Microsoft brand router.
Well, I've got one, and it's they've had it for you.
It says Microsoft on the box?
Oh, yeah, Microsoft on the box,
Microsoft
not a router.
Microsoft Broadband Networking MN700 Wireless G Base Station.
Wow.
Well, it's not wireless.
Well, but that's one of the ones that they make.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a hardwire.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what keeps us young.
Yeah.
All right, so definitely check to make sure if you don't have the, if it's really old, it
mm-hmm.
is possible that it does not have a router in it.
Yeah.
Rather, a firewall.
Firewall.
In it.
Might want to look into a Linksys.
Yeah, they're not expensive. Yeah, they're you know, you get them for under $100 with four connections.
They've started rebranding themselves Linksys by Cisco.
Mm-hmm.
Right, now they're Cisco routers. Right?
Yeah. Which and Cisco's a much bigger name in the IT world.
Selling power.
Right.
Yep.
But, yeah, I would check to see whether or not you have a router in there. And if not, you might think it's time, you know, to move on to a newer router, and that with a firewall in it, and then you don't need to run them on the machines inside that firewall.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds like a good idea.
All right.
Have a good one.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you so much. See, that's the problem, having to actually, you know, many people don't keep the manual. For
I almost wore my shirt today.
The RTFM?
Yeah.
Read the manual first?
Yeah, I think I'll wear it to the, when we do the Park Ave Fest.
There you go. I have my computer, that says, I have my t-shirt that says, no, I won't fix your computer.
I think I'll wear the RTFM one.
Yeah, I'll wear that.
Yeah, because that's another thing for the listeners out there. With the Park Ave Fest, we'll be out there schmoozing.
There you go.
On the first, what, it's Park Ave, I think it's the first and second. Yeah, first and second of August. So, again, another chance. Trying to get the word out to folks. Let them know that we're now on Jazz 90.1.
And very happy here.
Yes.
Although I have to admit, it was I do miss the longer breaks. I know people out there don't, and I'm glad that we don't have them, but I personally missed it, particularly at the 1 o'clock hour.
Well, at least Rob put it, what, we got 5 minutes?
We do have 5 minutes
now.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful.
Yep, that was a nice
little bit longer break,
but the ones in between,
yeah.
I mean, that's enough to blow your nose. And
that's about it, and that's fine. We don't need to take longer breaks. We're very happy not taking longer breaks. So, yeah, we're in good shape for that. It looks like the rain is, at least here in Greece, letting up a little. It's still raining, but not terribly hard. And certainly it's not as biblical as it was earlier. Late last week, I got caught in a hailstorm. We were out with a vendor. We all got caught in this hailstorm. And then he took a flight home and got caught in it again. Same storm. Followed him home. All right, our next caller,
I don't... At least he didn't follow the plane, and he was in the storm the whole trip.
Yeah, right, exactly. Our next caller, I don't have a name. Are you not giving us your name, or
Anonymous.
Did we just not get it?
My name is Susan.
Hiya, Susan. Where are you calling from?
Oh, just out in the rain.
Out in the rain. All right.
I have a question. Is there any way to erase or get your name off all these... networks like Google, or is there any way to get your privacy back or become anonymous unless you don't want to be? Can you know, when someone Googles your name, and not that I have anything bad on there, but you do that? Or are you just
generally, no. The way to do that is never post anything on the internet with your name on it.
Right.
Well, it gets worse than that, though. Any place that your information has gotten publicly,
a telephone book,
right? Any place that your information has gotten publicly, mm-hmm. places like Google have the right to search.
Your deed for your house is public information,
right? So there's all kinds of places where you simply can't get that back because you've already tacitly agreed to put your information out there publicly.
I know, like public. Information is public information, right. But just if someone decides to include your name in whatever information, a private party, and they've posted something on the website, their own website,
right?
And is there any way to un-Google something? Or
generally,
or
you call that website and ask them to remove your name,
right?
But that doesn't help you with Google.
You have to call every website Google finds your name on.
But even
you,
so, it's
right.
still it's
you
still
can try. Yeah,
Google.
You can try calling Google, and they may. It's usually only celebrities that have enough clout to get their name removed. But it's
and
possible.
Then of course there's always the Wayback Machine.
What's that?
There's a site on the internet. I think it's archive.org.
Yeah, the Internet Archive. Anything that ever was on the internet, even if it's deleted now, if it was on the internet before, you can find it in the old archive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, archive.org. It's called the Wayback Machine. You put in any URL. For example, if you were to put in soundbites.org with that Y, you would find that it's kept a list of all the pages from 1998 forward. The way they looked and what was on them and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, anybody who knew that, you know, 2 years ago your name was on Fred's site and they knew Fred's URL could look that up. So the reality is there's no way to get that stuff off. And what a lot of people are doing nowadays, at least in terms of email addresses, is they have multiple email addresses, at least two, a public one and a private one.
Oh, right.
And they tell their friends, don't ever tell anybody what the private email address is. And then that's the one they check every day. And once in a while, they go look at the public one to see if anything important is there. Mostly, it's just spam.
Right.
And then the problem that often ends up there is people who like to forward messages. They'll forward a forward of a forward. And all of those email addresses are sent in the clear. Because when you forward a message, you should delete all the other email messages that were on email
addresses yeah.
that were on it. And a lot of people don't bother doing that. So now those addresses get scavenged.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. And then they put... You know, they put 200 people in the to list. At the very least, put them all in the BCC list so nobody else can see them all.
And the other risk you always run into, though, is that folks, you know, even though you tell them don't pass my name out, but if they happen to get infected with a Trojan or spyware, your email could have been grabbed off their machine. There's always the potential out there that no matter how much you try. Other people that you trust, you know, could get infected, and it could get out that way, too.
The worst thing to me are all the pass this on things.
Yeah.
You know, everything from, pass this on, you'll have bad luck. Pass this on, you'll have good luck. You know what? God doesn't count emails.
Well, I
don't
know.
Send
I get
me
a lot
that
of those,
stuff.
To tell you the truth.
And most of them are fake messages. You know, Bill Gates is not going to send you $1 million.
Right.
And
Craig Shergold. I got Craig Shergold about 2 weeks ago.
He got better. 20 years ago, he got better.
There was this kid. This is a great story. There was this kid who was dying of brain cancer, and he wanted to get into the Guinness Book of World Records for getting the most postcards.
Get well cards. That's how it started.
Yeah. Right. And it went out all over the internet. And in fact, he did get into Guinness Book of World Records as getting the most postcards when he was 11 years old. He's now in his 30s. He got better. They cured him. He's got a family. He's got kids. The hospital still gets millions of postcards every year, and they can't stop it.
The post office had to create a new subsection just for that hospital.
Yep, and they can't stop it.
So it turned into business cards
just a couple
and turned
weeks
into
ago.
All sorts of things.
Yeah. So, yes, there are, to make a long story even longer, I am sorry, but there's simply no real way, Susan, to get yourself off of all those lists.
It's a problem.
It is a problem. And
although,
ironically,
it's worse in other countries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
okay.
Susan.
Bye-bye.
All right. We are going to take another break, but we will be back in just a minute or two. There you go. With Dave Enright and Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, I'm Jazz 90.1 meteorologist Josh Nichols. As Jazz 90.1 takes jazz further, it's my hope that I can take the forecast further by providing you with the weather information you need to stay alert, informed, and ahead of the elements. Morning, noon, or night, from hilltop to lakeshore, I track the weather every step of the way and will bring you a forecast that's reliable and the only one of its kind in the area that's certified by the American Meteorological Society with its highest seal of approval. So, whether you're singing in the rain or on the sunny side of the street, no matter what number Mother Nature has in mind for our area, you can count on getting the latest weather forecast each weekday to help plan out your day, right here on Jazz 90.1, taking jazz further.
Ladies and gentlemen, y'all ready for the blues?
If you're ready for some blues, look no further than Sunday nights. I'm Greg Lefebvre, your host for Doc's Juke Joint. Every Sunday from 7 till 10, part of our 5 hours of blues on Sunday nights. On the Juke Joint, you'll hear new blues, classic blues, and our extensive music calendar. Dig the blues on Sunday nights on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Greetings, this is Mike Kincaid. Please join me for foreground music, Sundays 3 to 5 p.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Uh-oh, here we go. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1 at 41 minutes after the hour. Well, here it comes. Out in the forums, Rob Linton has posted a message. Okay, and I quote, "Well, we said we would only give them away on the air, but I am feeling generous on this rainy Saturday. The first 10 people who email me with the subject, I love Soundbites, will receive a pair of tickets to the anniversary show on September 5th. Email rob at jazz901.org right now with your name, mailing address, and phone number, and you could win. So those of you who are listening, the first 10 people who send a message, an email message with the subject, I love Soundbites, we'll receive a pair of tickets to the anniversary show on September 5th. And that email address is rob, R-O-B, at jazz901.org. Make sure you include your name, your mailing address, and your phone number. Otherwise, you get nothing because we can't send it to you. So that's rob at jazz901.org. That's jazz901.org. The subject is I Love Soundbites, and your name, your mailing address, and your phone number. And you, you personally, could be one of the lucky ones to win a pair of tickets to the anniversary show on September 5th. I don't know how you could be more excited than this.
Yeah, and they're already talked about
that. Well done, Rob. Well done indeed.
I mean, there's going to be some giveaways there, and, you know,
it's going to be great. It's going to be giveaways. It's going to be vendors. It's going to be us. It's going to be people that we've been listening to and talking to. We've been listening to call us on the air for 20 years. It's just going to be great.
This is unbelievable.
It's going to be great. It's going to be fun. I can't say enough about Laurel Ann Romeo and, of course, Rob Linton, who is who have both been doing
making
the yeoman service
happen.
To get this done.
You know, I mean, this is unbelievable.
Great
what
people.
Doing, and throwing together, you know, what, we've only been on the air now 6 weeks.
Here.
I believe, yeah, on a, right. Here for 6 weeks, mentioned that, you know, oh, it's our 20th anniversary. Bam! They already got it together, and it's...
They're serious. They're serious here, and I'm very excited about this. I'm very, very excited. So we're very excited about this, and it's going to be fun. So I'm hoping that 50 people have already emailed. At least the first 10 we're going to get their tickets this time, and then I'm sure he'll do it again. So keep watching the forums. Definitely listen to member-supported Jazz 90.1 during the week and during this show. They haven't really finalized exactly how the on-air giveaways will be done. We're not going to be doing it this week. But
I mean, we only mentioned the Amerks and Frontiers so far. I mean, that's just so far, because he just announced it, just a couple of days ago,
right,
that this is happening. Already those two folks, and I think the lineup is going to be even a lot more. And,
right,
you know, given the Labor Day weekend.
All right, so it's very, very exciting. I hope 10 of you have already emailed, and you will be getting your tickets. This is... Scammers scammers are branching out. If there's a method of communication, they're on it. You can get a text message from your bank telling you there's been suspicious activity on your account. You call the number on your phone to see what's going on, and before you know it, you're a victim. Welcome to the next big thing in phishing. Law enforcement and security experts say that for more than a year now, scammers have been using scam text messages to prey on small regional banks and their customers. And according to a report set to be released this coming Tuesday by Cisco Systems, the problem has only begun, and it will be getting worse in future months. Here's how the scam works. The criminals pick a bank, say a credit union in Medford, Oregon, and they bombard every phone in Medford's 541 area code with a phishing message sent by SMS, the short message service texting, telling the victims to call a fake 800 number that looks like it's from a local credit union. Because they're targeting a bank in the region, the bad guys have a pretty good chance of hitting real customers who may not have heard that this is a scam. They set up a fake voice-operated system and steal information when people enter their account numbers, passwords, and other sensitive information to authenticate themselves on the system. When the criminals use this information permission to transfer money overseas. The banks take the loss. By targeting regional banks, the scam has managed to stay somewhat under the radar and not attract a lot of attention. Big banks have large security teams to set up to tackle this type of fraud, but with a regional institution such as a credit union, their entire IT team for the bank might only be, you know, three guys with a wrench, and that's it. You know, that's all you got. Another problem is that for the banks is that the scam subverts one of the main techniques that banks and security experts have been drilling into their customers' heads for years now. You know, we always say, if you have questions, call your bank or they'll call you. Well, SMS is pretty close to calling your bank. It's getting to the point, like, what do we tell people to do now? Criminals have been going through the country, credit union by credit union, bank by bank. It's worked pretty well for them. It's a pretty innovative technique. So the thing to do right today, right now today, is I want you to go to your bank's website and write down their 800 number or their local phone number. If they're a local bank, then they have a local phone number for you. Write it down. If you get one of these text messages, call the bank on that real phone number, and that will help you. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dar. Dar, where are you calling from?
How you doing, gentlemen? It's from Oshawa, Toronto, Ontario, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Question about especially netbooks. They started with matte on the 701s, and they've gone to glossy.
Right.
Why right. Glossy?
It makes your pictures and movies more vibrant and more colorful and look better.
And the eye strain is incredible.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I completely agree with you. Yep. Anybody who knows what they're looking at prefers a matte finish on their screen. The problem is matte does not sell as well as glossy.
Matte is still an option on the 17-inch model. Or there are third-party aftermarket companies that will replace the glossy screen with a matte screen. Or they put a anti-glare filter over the glossy screen, which cuts down on the glare that way. Interestingly enough, the white MacBook has a glossy screen that isn't as bad as the silver MacBooks, because on the silver MacBooks, there's literally a piece of glass over the screen, over the LCD, so that actually makes it a little glossier and a little more reflective than the white MacBooks. I don't have much of a problem I have one of the white MacBooks. I don't have much of a problem with glare at all because there's no glass on the front of the screen.
Yeah, you probably don't wear glasses.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Yep.
Oh.
So that can be something to look at when you're looking to get a new Mac, is the white one is less glossy than the other glossies, or looking into some of the companies that offer the third-party anti-glare. I think Tech Restore is the name of the company.
Is that the stick-ons?
Yeah. Yeah, we've had anti-glare things in the past for a long time that were polarizing filters to cut down on glare from overhead lights in the sun, and some of the same sort of technology is now being used for an anti-glare covering that sticks on the front of your computer.
Okay, quickly, my contribution to you...
Thank you.
Yes. ...is that eye exercises, eye fatigue, which is rampant amongst you guys, you would think.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is an old Ayurvedic thing, and you got to close your eyes. I call it the tick-tock exercise. You close your eyes, and you have an analog clock, and it's going tick-tock, and you make your eyes act like the second hand of that analog clock, and you follow that second hand around the dial. Okay?
Right, got it.
All right, now here's a trick. So you stop at noon at 12.
Right.
And then anti-clockwise.
Ah.
You will find, now again, as a mechanic, I noticed that with my lousy eyeballs, around between 6 and 8 o'clock, they just wouldn't tick on that talk.
Right.
They were lazy, and all eye strain and lousy eyesight is caused by crappy muscles.
Right, and it strengthens the muscles. Great.
Yep.
Now, you can further step two after you've mastered that. Instead of stopping at noon and 6, at 12 and 6, you can fool your eyeballs and stop at 3 and 9 and just do one quadrant back and forth
yeah.
to fool it. But I tell you guys, this is, it's a horrible thing to do because my glasses, and they're not even 6 months old, they're no good.
Yep, yep, yep.
Okay, thank you again for the lovely show. Have a great day.
And thank you, Dar, both for your question and for your eye exercises. That's excellent. Thank you so much.
Not see, only your computers, but your eye health.
Right, right. It's eye health. It's everything. You get everything here. That's what counts. Thank you, Dar. That's excellent. All right. This is a great story. iPhone lovers who want their device freed from their wireless network could soon get their wish. According to a report by the Wall Street Journal earlier this week, the Department of Justice, in contemplating the launch of an investigation into the exclusivity agreements that device manufacturers often sign with big incumbent telecom carriers. At issue, according to the report, is whether having exclusive rights to a certain high-profile wireless device, such as the Apple iPhone or the Palm Pre, gives larger carriers an unfair competitive advantage over smaller wireless carriers that can't afford to pony up the cash needed to get the top devices on their networks. Although there is some doubt as to whether the Justice Department would be on firm legal standing if it tried to bar companies from signing exclusivity agreements, the fact that it is even considering an investigation raises some interesting questions about the future of the wireless industry. For example, if carriers could not secure big-name devices for their networks, how would it change the way they compete for customers? The company most immediately feeling an impact by ending exclusivity agreements would be, of course, AT&T, as its recent success has been helped largely by the fact that it is the only mobile network in the United States to offer the Apple iPhone. AT&T says the device helped it substantially since its release in 2007, as the average monthly revenues from its iPhone subscribers are nearly double those of the rest of its mobile subscriber base. Part of that is because every iPhone user has the data plan. AT&T has also received a significant boost in overall subscriptions from the device, as the iPhone accounted for an estimated 73% of its subscriber additions in the first quarter. However, there have been rumblings from iPhone users recently that AT&T could lose a good number of its smartphone customers if the iPhone were to be available on other networks. Complaints over the company's pricing policies and its data speeds mean that some iPhone users would gladly shift over to companies such as Sprint or Verizon if given the choice.
And the problem is you can't, because the iPhone only works on a GSM network, and in America that's AT&T or T-Mobile. So even if it was unlocked from AT&T, your only other choice is T-Mobile because of the technical differences between mm-hmm. them. That will be alleviated somewhat with the 4G cell network. The two competing standards, CDMA and GSM, both standards committees have standardized on LTE for the fourth generation cell network, which then all cell companies in America will use. So theoretically, any phone you buy that's LTE or 4G network capable, you can use on any network. The thing is, we've been doing exclusive contracts here in America for 20, 30 years since cell phones first came out. But in Europe, it's much, much different. And one of the reasons especially now the iPhone, has gotten cheaper is that it's subsidized. When you buy something like the iPhone or the BlackBerry, now you're getting it for $100 or $200. That phone actually cut, because we used to be a Verizon reseller, so we know how this works. That phone, literally costs $600-$700, to make and to buy. And AT&T is giving you a subsidy, so they're discounting the price on the phone and paying Apple the difference on the phone because they know you're going to give them $2,000 over the next 2 years of your contract. So in Europe, where contracts are not common, you pay $600 for your phone, but then you don't have a contract and can switch carriers anytime you want.
Right.
So do you want to have a cheap initial price, or do you want to have a no contract price?
Right.
And that's the problem in the way the different governments have worked out cell phones over the years.
Well, that also explains a friend of mine, his cell phone broke.
Yep.
A friend of his said, oh, here, you can take my old one, but it was a Cricket phone, and he's on Verizon.
Right.
And they said, yeah, we can't.
Yeah, Verizon and Sprint are both CDMA. So right now, the best phone for Sprint is the Palm Pre, and the best phone on Verizon is the BlackBerry, and those are exclusive contracts with those carriers, too.
Right, all right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that music signifies that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Thank you all very much. For those of you who did not call in, I don't know why you didn't. You should have. And you'll get your chance next week. Don't forget to watch the forums and listen to member-supported Jazz 90.1 for your chance to win. Win big to win tickets to our September 5th, 20th anniversary blowout. For Dave Van Wright and Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to us here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will be back next week at the same time on this great station with a whole lot more of sound bites. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.